Hello and welcome to Tapped. I'm Joseph Fusco. I'm sitting here with Julianne Donofrio.
Hello.
And today we are going to be talking about a whole host of issues, both real life, R-E-A-L life, and R-E-E-L life, real life. Real life and real life. It is currently August 28th, 2017, and one cannot talk about anything without first talking about the absolute horrible events that are taking place in Texas right now. This weekend, the Houston area was devastated by Hurricane Harvey, and it is just heartbreaking to see the images on TV and online of elderly people up to their chins in their retirement homes, people carrying babies and dogs through 4 feet high flooding. It's just absolutely tragic, and our hearts and prayers go out to the people of Texas, and particularly in the greater Houston area.
Absolutely, and it brings back a lot of memories for those of us who lived through and watched Hurricane Katrina, and the fact that thousands of those who evacuated Louisiana and coastal Mississippi did end up in Houston, which opened their arms. And so many, there's estimates of up to 100,000 evacuees from Katrina stayed in Houston. So the idea that they have to go through this again is heartbreaking. But Texas is strong, America is strong, and I know even our listeners overseas, I know you're wondering what you can do to help. So a few thoughts, and we have retweeted it, so please check out our profile on Twitter at TappedPod. Some ways you can help. You can help by donating to the Red Cross. You can help by donating either money or even your airline miles to Team Rubicon. They're helping vets and first responders make their way down to Texas to help out. Things you might not have even thought of. Diapers. The Texas Diaper Bank. Desperately in need of your donations for the littlest victims, because often resources don't include supplies for babies. So these are just a few. Food banks. Work with your local churches or synagogues or mosques. However you choose to help, even if it's a dollar, even if it's your prayer, this is what makes America great, and we do wish everyone the very best in this, what will be a very long recovery.
Absolutely. I have a question. You mentioned diapers. Has there been any publicized resources that could be used for the even smaller, more innocent victims' pets?
Absolutely. The Humane Society, the SPCA, all of these are also accepting donations because they are trying to help shelter and feed pets. Luckily, we're not seeing what we did in Katrina, where many owners had to leave their pets behind, or they themselves refused to leave because their pet was a family member. So I think it's we've learned a lot, lesson learned. And so yes, please do reach out if those little fur babies touch your heart. The Humane Society and SPCA are there on the ground as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Texas is an incredible place. It is, you don't mess with Texas, certainly. Texas this weekend has been on the map because of the tragedy with Hurricane Harvey. But there was a native son of Texas that sadly we lost this weekend. And that would be Tobe Hooper, the film director, who is best known for his debut film, which is not always the case with many directors, but his debut film, which, if, as if Texas didn't need to be put on the map, this certainly put it somewhere, which is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Wow.
Tobe Hooper was a director of the same generation as George Romero, Martin Scorsese, Wes Craven, John Carpenter, Brian De Palma, Steven Spielberg, Francis Coppola, etc. He is, as I said, best known for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but he also had a very interesting filmography, which included The Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, a film I'm quite fond of, Life Force, the TV miniseries of Stephen King's Salem's Lot, which I'm also very fond of, a little scene film called Fun House, and an even lesser scene film called Invaders from Mars, which I must confess I'm not very fond of. But he certainly had his own style and made a mark, and he, in particular, I would say, made one of, at least in the top three greatest horror films ever made, and that's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's quite a year, then, to lose both George Romero and Tobe Hooper.
It is. It's very sad. They were both about the same age. Tobe Hooper's cause of death has not been released. It is sad, but we at least have his body of work, which even in the, say, 48 hours since his passing, has already been given some revisionist examination, particularly with what I would say is arguably the most controversial title in his filmography, and that is Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
Which single-handedly ruined my childhood at the age of 9 when
I
saw
The Clown.
Damn you. Yeah, Poltergeist is a genuinely terrifying film.
Absolutely.
In a different way than Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, which we'll talk about in a moment. There is an interesting footnoted issue about Poltergeist.
Mm.
And that is, Poltergeist came out in 1982, which was a spectacular year for movies. Blade Runner, Tron, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Tootsie, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and E.T.
Khan!
Exactly.
So I just keep screaming things.
Steven Spielberg wrote and produced Poltergeist.
Yes.
Tobe Hooper directed Poltergeist. But there has been a long-standing conspiracy theory, if you will, that Tobe Hooper actually didn't direct.
What do you mean?
Well, at the time, there was a looming Directors Guild strike, and Steven Spielberg was finishing up E.T. and producing Poltergeist at the same time.
Wow.
He diverted his creative team between the two films. So, for example, his longtime editor Michael Kahn and his longtime composer John Williams, they split up. He put Michael Kahn on Poltergeist and he put Carol Littleton as the editor of E.T. He kept John Williams as the editor, composer of E.T., and he brought in Jerry Goldsmith to compose Poltergeist.
Oh, I didn't realize Goldsmith did Poltergeist.
He did. And the reason for putting Kahn on Poltergeist and putting Carol Littleton on E.T. was that E.T. was a very nurturing film, if you will.
Absolutely.
And he wanted, I think he wanted a woman's touch in the editing room. Poltergeist is a visceral film. Poltergeist is all about being built in the cuts.
Absolutely.
And he wanted, I think, more of a technician on that. And certainly Michael Kahn, who edited all of Steven Spielberg's films, basically, including the incredible first 25 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, which is the greatest example of film editing.
Absolutely.
So he split up his creative team, and he installs Tobe Hooper as the director of Poltergeist. And if you look at Poltergeist, in comparison with the rest of Tobe Hooper's films, there is just a very, very different style to Poltergeist than to the other films. First of all, it's the biggest budget that he ever had, so he finally had money, to really make it. And it just really does not look like a Tobe Hooper movie. So there is a long-standing suspicion that Spielberg, if not ghost-directed Poltergeist, actually directed Poltergeist with Tobe Hooper sitting on the sidelines. There are very few behind-the-scenes photos of the filming of that movie. Mm. And it's sort of like the secret that's never really talked about. Spielberg has never mentioned... Mm. He's always said, you know, of course Tobe Hooper directed it, and there have been varying accounts between the actors after the fact as to who was present for...
So they wanted to get the film wrapped before any strike?
Correct.
And thus they were racing against the clock. He put Tobe in the chair and...
But might have been really calling the shots.
Sure. Or saying, here's my storyboard, right. Here's what I want.
So, who knows? It's one of those great mysteries of Hollywood film lore.
And who wouldn't want their name on Poltergeist? And he earned his own right with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, that influenced a whole generation.
It influenced a whole generation. It spawned a whole cottage industry.
That's right. I mean, gave Renee Zellweger the following sequel.
And Matthew McConaughey. They're both in part four.
Part four. Oh, yes.
The next generation. Or the new generation.
There you go.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist are two very frightening films for very different reasons. Poltergeist, things jump out at you. You have images that are visceral, like the clown doll.
Still recall it.
The tree coming through the window, what's under the bed, all these
things. Television,
the television.
Carol Ann.
And that wonderful score. It
Oh, yeah.
La, 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 la.
Oh, yeah. Let's go back to E.T. Phoney Home.
the meat face, the whole—I mean, like it's a scary
movie pool
because
things
are put in the movie to specifically frighten you because they are universally frightening tropes. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a completely different type of film. That is truly, I believe, the closest capturing of a nightmare that I've ever seen in a movie. I believe it is an actual nightmare.
Really?
Yeah. There is a mania and a hysteria. Not much really happens in the movie. I mean, it's a bunch of, you know, teenagers driving in their van. They pick up a weird hitchhiker.
Never pick up hitchhikers. Never,
especially ones who look like Edwin Neal, who plays the hitchhiker. He freaks them out. They throw him out of the car. They drive. They run out of gas or whatever it is. They pull up to a creepy house in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Texas.
And then, spoiler alert,
they go exploring. Not a good idea. And they go in the house, and one by one, they're all kind of picked off, essentially, by an absolutely frightening figure. This 6'4", 250-pound guy wearing a butcher's apron, a tie, and a human mask. And he's Leatherface. And it's just the rooms have bones everywhere. The film was shot in 16mm and then blown up to 35, so it's got this grainy aspect to it. There are all these weird high-pitched sounds throughout. It really looks like what my nightmares look like.
Oh. Good to know. In case you were wondering, folks at home.
So, it is some of the just best filmmaking I've ever seen. And it was his first film, and there's something very kind of organic to the way that it came about. It's brilliantly cast. It's stunningly designed and shot, even for its low budget. Actually, it's partly because of its low budget does it look so good. There was a big budget remake in the 2000s that, you know, they had all the money they wanted. Doesn't do it.
It's the same when they tried to remake Psycho. It just
leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Yeah. Some things need to be left alone. But these are two good suggestions, Poltergeist and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If folks are looking for something, if you haven't seen these are obviously available. I'm sure you could rent them, download them.
Sure.
Those are readily available and worth checking out, especially in what is our next topic.
Yes.
The summer slump. So mid-August to early September is typically slow for Hollywood.
Yeah.
We're all used to these dog days of summer. Well, they used to be dog days of summer, but this year in particular has been awful at the box office for a number of reasons. Partly this weekend was a particularly bad weekend for the box office because of what was happening with the Hurricane Harvey watch. But that alone does not excuse these numbers. It's what's out in theaters.
This is recorded as the worst weekend at the box office in 16 years.
Wow.
And... you know, there not much opened this weekend, and those few things that did open got very little publicity, and there's just a lot of bad movies out.
Yeah.
There's only so many times you can go see Wonder Woman.
Right.
There's only so many times you can go see Dunkirk.
Right, and they actually re-released Wonder Woman. They brought her back into theaters before releasing it on home video and DVD. So she had been gone, but now she's back.
She's back.
And doing okay, apparently better than the 3D restoration of James Cameron's Terminator 2. So,
Hollywood, God bless them. You know, they're kind of like your smart kid who does really stupid things sometimes, and you just go, oh, bless their heart. Hollywood never understands the fact that when they make good movies, regardless of the genre, and that's the key, regardless of the genre,
yep,
people will go to the movies.
Absolutely.
If you put out garbage, regardless of the genre, people won't go to the movies. And for nearly 90 years, Hollywood has had a competition with home entertainment. First it was radio.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was television. Then it was home video, VHS, mm-hmm, DVD.
Beta.
Now it's the internet.
Streaming.
And it's streaming.
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon.
And every technological advance that's ever happened in movie theaters has been because as a response to something that just happened at home. So radio comes into play, it's talking pictures. TV starts getting popular, it's color and CinemaScope, widescreen.
3D.
3D. But they don't realize that last year you had a movie like Moonlight, a movie that was made for 25 cents that did win Best Picture and made a fortune because it resonated with people. It's a great movie.
Absolutely.
This year, Wonder Woman, this could have been a dog. This could have been just another action superhero movie, and it was a terrific movie, so people
so
went.
So much fun.
The Big Sick, a lovely little rom-com, which I'm not Mr. Rom-Com, believe me. I loved the Big Sick.
So let's talk about that. There have been a number of really fun, interesting films this year. Some are still in the theaters, so let's talk about those first. The Big Sick is still hanging on.
Big Sick is still there.
It's a delightful new type of rom-com, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's not your typical boy meets girl. But it is absolutely delightful, and it stars one of the great guys from Silicon Valley, and it's based on his true life story on how he met his wife. We won't tell you much more. We don't want to give away any spoilers, but I think it was really smart and funny and appealed to a broader audience.
Yeah.
I would say another rom-com, which I know you haven't watched, but I thoroughly enjoyed, is on Netflix already. It's The Incredible Jessica James, starring one of the correspondents or former correspondents from The Daily Show. And it, too, is a different type of rom-com. It's a bit edgier, and it doesn't have the backing of Judd Apatow like The Big Sick does. So it played well in festivals. The Incredible Jessica James played well in festivals. But I encourage folks to check that out on Netflix as well if you're looking for what I believe is the future of rom-coms. But one which I'm so thrilled is doing well is Girls Trip, which is still in theaters. And this is, I think, the first film. It's co-written by an African-American woman, Tracy Oliver, and it's the first film written that's reached over 100 million. And it has an African-American team in front of and behind the camera, and it goes to exactly what you were saying. If you make a good movie, despite the genre, despite what you think is your typical audience, people will come. If people want good movies.
People want good movies. Hidden Figures. It's not to pull an oldie out, but Hidden Figures lasted for like 6 months.
Yeah, it was terrific.
It was a terrific movie. Another film that opened this week that is getting tremendous buzz is Patty Cakes.
Yes.
Which is about a young woman living in a poor town in New Jersey who has dreams of becoming a rapper. And does so against the odds of her family and her environment.
And Dunkirk is still in theaters. So for folks who haven't seen that World War II drama yet by Christopher Nolan, I highly recommend you see that in a theater. It's an experience you simply cannot replicate fully at home.
No, that is definitely a movie theater experience. But, you know, I'm old-fashioned. You know, I'm a purist. I like to go to the movies. I like to see movies in a theater on a big screen with a tub of popcorn and have that be an experience. Being there should be part of the experience. I just want to add another film, Atomic Blonde. An action film with Charlize Theron takes place in the late 80s and around the time that the Berlin Wall comes down. And yeah, it's a typical kind of spy thriller, but it's got a little bit more of an edge. It's got a little bit of heart to it, and it's got an amazing soundtrack. And it's a lot of fun. Charlize really kicks some butt in that, and she's just awesome.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. And in light of what is happening in Houston, I just want to make a pitch for an Inconvenient sequel. This is not going to be a one-time event, I'm afraid.
No.
It was really eye-opening. I know documentaries aren't for everyone, but this is, I think, a really important story that I hope people check out just to understand what part we each have to play on this beautiful planet called Earth. So highly recommend folks going to see that as well. Now, a few movies that are already available to rent. One I loved in particular, Get Out.
That was, I think,
Jordan Peele is going to be nominated.
it's the best picture of the year, hands down.
Yeah.
Hands down. That was a tremendous movie.
I once overheard an older woman try to explain it to someone, and all I could do was guffaw when she said, "Well, it's sort of like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner." Oy. And I was like, no, it's not.
No, it's not. Oh, God.
But it's another one of those that occasionally you jump out of your seat, and really smart, really funny. And if you're a bit into the horror or just messing with your mind, it's a great film. So highly recommend checking out Get Out. On a lighter note, Beauty and the Beast.
I loved Beauty and the Beast. And I know I'm certainly not the demographic for this film by any stretch of the imagination. I had the time of my life.
Another win for Emma Watson.
She's delightful.
Delightful. And doesn't claim to have the operatic voice. But I think it was just a lovely adaptation of a much beloved animated film.
Yeah.
There were a couple that, you know, if it's a rainy afternoon, I would recommend Going in Style.
Now, Going in Style, which starred Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, and Alan Arkin, you can't go wrong with them, is a remake. It's a remake of a 1981 film of the same title, which starred George Burns, Art Carney, and Lee Strasberg, and was directed by a 27-year-old man. And the three principals were in their late 70s and 80s when he made it. And it's the film is about three retired men who feel, you know, screwed over by the system, and they decide to rob a bank. And these are not thieves, these are old retired men.
Sure.
And in the updated version, it's because the job that they retired from is cutting their pensions. And so they decide to rob a bank to get even.
And it's lovely. It's directed by Zach Braff.
It's absolutely charming. I was hesitant at first because the original one, which is very different in tone than the new one. I mean, it was, you know, George Burns, Art Carney, and Lee Strasberg, three titans of that
generation. It's hard to beat, yeah.
But that film is a lot more serious than this film was.
And then another one that's available to rent now is Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which, again, another great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
And Baby Groot. I mean, come on.
No, don't push the button. It's the best scene of the movie, and it never gets old. But yeah.
Yeah, that one was fun. If you're again wanting to snuggle on a Saturday afternoon. But so then we will obviously probably do another episode on this, but to come this fall. We're in a slump right now, but start saving up because there's some really amazing films coming out this fall, including It by Stephen King. I know you're a big King fan.
Well, It happens to be my favorite book of all time.
Wow.
And I only read it not long ago, and I had already picked my favorite book. So this trounced my favorite book.
Really?
Again,
it's the clowns.
They made a TV movie of it in 1990 with Tim Curry as the clown, Pennywise the clown, and it's hard to beat Tim Curry doing anything, really. It was a two-parter series. The first night was much better than the second night. I don't know how they're going to play it in this film. The book is a mammoth tome. It's like 1,200 pages long, and it is a masterpiece. I'm looking forward to the movie, but I highly recommend reading the book. That book is so scary. I was reading a scene on the subway, and I jumped in a particularly frightening moment. Like, yeah.
Okay, I'm scared. One for all of us Colin Firth fans, the Kingsman sequel is coming out in late September, The Golden Circle. They've definitely been promoting the heck out of that. It has an all-star cast, and looks to be like a fun action flick. But I think the one of the iconic masterpiece. I don't even have words to describe it.
It's in a class all of its own.
Blade Runner 2049, which stars one of my, not just Ryan Gosling, but Harrison Ford.
And it's the sequel, obviously, to Blade Runner, which is a masterpiece. And speaking of masterpiece sequels, come December 15th, it's back.
It's Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Oh, gosh.
But it can't be the last.
Well, we will find out on December
15th. No, I don't want it to be the last.
Well, Luke Skywalker knows one thing and one thing only. That the Jedi must end.
No.
Because I haven't watched that trailer 1,800 times in the first hour it was uploaded. And one other film that I'm really looking forward to.
Me too.
Is Kenneth Branagh's all-star production of Murder on the Orient Express, which has, everybody is in it, including our favorite Broadway performer.
Oh.
Off-Broadway performer. Well, he was my favorite off-Broadway performer. One Mr. Leslie Odom Jr.
Tony Award winner.
Tony Award winner, Leslie Odom Jr. of Hamilton fame.
A.K.A. Aaron Burr.
You are the worst, bah. Sorry.
But he's delightful and amazing, and it looks like a great...
Looks like a great movie.
Great movie. Wasn't that filmed on...
It's filmed in 70mm, much like Branagh did with his Hamlet 20 years ago. And the image looks stunning, and it's going to get a 70mm release. Apparently, rumor has it, as will Blade Runner and Star Wars this year. All because of the Dunkirk revival of 70mm.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So lots of cool stuff coming on.
Lots to look forward to. So we may be in a slump right now, but looking forward to a great fall.
Absolutely. And, you know, remember, whenever there's a slump of any sort, in just a moment, this time will pass, as U2 says. Once again, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the victims and survivors of the Houston tragedy with their hurricane. And our remembrances go to the family and relatives and loved ones of Toby Hooper, his fans and friends, and everyone who loved him and his movies.
So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Tapped. Again, for more information on how you can help the victims of Hurricane Harvey, just check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Tapped Pod. Thanks for listening.
Take care.